Dr. Oscar van Heerden. You know, Louise said that he's a doctor. Come, let's reveal the secret. What is the doctor all about?
Thanks for having me. No, it's a doctor in philosophy and specifically international relations, concentrating on political economy and looking at issues of trade with South Africa and South Africa with the rest of the world.
You know, I've done some research about you, and one of the things, as you said, international relations. We get guests talk about all kinds of things, but international relations and the focus on SADC, I mean, that is an unlocking the economy of Africa, if we get this right. What inspired you to focus on this?
Look, I mean, I think too many people are obsessed, I think, when you study international politics, to always concentrate on the big powers, the United States, Europe, China, and so on. And we often forget about our own backyard. And so I thought my focus should be more on Africa, and specifically Southern Africa.
That's very, very interesting, because in my previous life, I was a publisher and tourism was a big thing. And, you know, we always spoke about our core markets as being the UK and the US. And 2 or 3 hours away from us, we have thousands and thousands of people who are dollar spenders. Mm. And we don't count that as our core market. However, just recently, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, I saw a report came out from the local MEC that said regional tourism has just grown significantly and has slowly becoming a major part. And I really think if you look at places like the Middle East, even India, the guy that's traveling three of the short hauls are making up the bulk of their tourism, which makes sense. So I really, really applaud you for working in the SADC area, and I hope that your work, your research, will foster better relations and also open the eyes of our local politicians and businesses to strengthen those relations, because I think you can start at home.
And no, absolutely. You know, the success of some of our big companies, whether it is telecommunications like Vodacom, MTN and the likes, just by going into the continent, they've exponentially grown their base and have made millions, billions, in fact. The banks in the financial sector. And of course, now, slowly but surely, our mining houses are also cottoning on. And as you know, the success of one like Whitey Basson taking ShopRite into the continent, has the returns for ShopRite has been enormous.
But we got more important things to talk about today. And before we jump into, we must say this, that Dr. van Heerden has just launched a book, a very interesting book and a very appropriate time for the book to be launched. Before I go there, just give us some early background, you know, the person and also your upbringing. What inspired you to get into this? I mean, for me, I always from school days said I want to be a business person. So, you know, something triggers you into that. So what was your trigger moment?
No, look, I mean, I'm a local boy here. I'm from Cape Town, even though I now reside in Johannesburg. You know, grew up and studied at high school in Mitchell's Plain. And, you know, you have three choices, as you know, Tishan. You know, those days in the 80s,
teacher,
either
police.
Yeah, you know, you had a choice. You either get involved in the church and throw yourselves there, or you join a gang. And then, of course, there was a third option, which was you get involved in community activities. You become aware that there's this unjust system called apartheid, and you are being marginalized and so on. So that sort of was the route that I chose and got involved in the struggle and so forth, anti-apartheid struggle. And that just took me in a whole different direction. And in a way, as you say, it ended up with me going to university and deciding, you know, let me study politics, let me understand this a bit better. And that took me all the way to Cambridge. It wasn't planned, but, you know, the stars aligned and so forth, and I got a scholarship. So I spent some time in the UK at one of the best universities in the world. And that really prepared me to come back and plow back into politics. And that's, the book came about because this is my third book. The first one was really around my PhD, talking about foreign policy and the time of Thabo Mbeki and so on. And then the second book, 2 Minutes to Midnight, was looking at this dilemma that was happening in the ANC as the ruling party, and this fight between what you could call the forces of good and the forces of evil, Zuma's people versus Cyril's people, and who was going to win. And the book was very well received, so I thought I'd do a sequel. And so the last book, this latest book, is The Party Over? Asking about the ANC, and I think people will enjoy it.
You know, we just launched our voter education campaign last night. Interesting conversations about what are the rights of people and why they should vote, how they must participate in the democracy that we fought for. And I think your book is so well-timed. Is the party over? Is the party over? I mean, you've been so closely linked to the ruling party for many years. And I say that with respect because I think you're a commentator. You've been watching the ins and outs. You've been closely, you've been in the front row for many of what's happening at the ruling party. So you most probably one of the best to write one of these here. But let's ask the question, is the party over?
Well, I mean, let me answer it like this. The book is, there's two parts to the book. The first part is really looking at this latest elective conference of 2022 at Nasrec, where, again, as you know, Cyril won with a very small margin in 2017 that really put some constraints on him in terms of how he would want to take the country forward. But this time around, it was Hima versus Mkhize. Is he going to consolidate? And indeed he has got a bigger margin. And now you can begin to see he's a bit more free in terms of what he's doing and so forth. So that's the first part of the book, telling people about what went on at that conference. A bit of gossiping, if you like. And I think a lot of people enjoy that. What was happening behind the scenes and so forth. Money moving around and so forth. The second part then asks, to come to your question, the important question about, has the ANC actually achieved its historic mission? They've obviously one of the oldest liberation parties, 1912, and one would argue, some would argue, once 1994 happened, that was the job of the ANC done. You know, people have got their rights, they are treated as equal citizens and so forth. But then there are others that says, no, that's just the start. Then there is now, what do we do? And how do we transform and uplift the black majority within South Africa with so many centuries of colonialism, apartheid, and so forth? And in answering that, I then say, look, we are in an election year this year. So in answering, has the ANC achieved its objective? It must then be, and how will that play out in the 2024 elections? And so I go into a few scenarios and so on, because everyone, as you know, is now very obsessed with all these pollings and saying the ANC is going to get less than 50, less than 30, and so on and so forth. So I hope it does, it makes for interesting reading.
I think it does. But, you know, is the party over? If you look at the last 12 months, for example, all the happenings inside the ruling party in the last 12 months. Then you look at the current situation of the MK party coming up here, and that's a clear division inside of that. It just answers, you know, the question, is the party over? And if you look at this, this is a major rift. This is a former president breaking it up. It's a division, and it's real. There's historic significance that has now moved away from the party. And one still begs the question, is the party over? But from what I just heard from you, you know, there's phases. This may be a maturity phase. This may be a realignment for the true party that should be. It's the adult version of the party.
No, absolutely. If you look at the title, there is some...
There's a bit of a play, yeah.
There's a bit of a play, exactly. You know, it has been all fun and games, perhaps, this last three decades, since 1994. We've built a back middle class. People are much more better off, and so on and so forth. And so perhaps it's now time to, as you say, mature. The party is finished, you know. It's now about, is the adults in the room? There's real challenges. with load shedding, with unemployment, with inequality and so forth. And as you rightfully point out, there's now the latest split. You know, there's been a number of splits over the last 30 years, as you know, starting with the UDM and Holomisa. And then there was COPE. And then we had EFF with Julius Malema. And now the latest incarnation is MK, a former president of the ANC. And so the ANC is facing a huge, huge challenge going into this election. I think with the MK party, perhaps to just share my view, I think they are going to give the ANC a run for their money in KZN in particular. They might take a bit of votes in Gauteng because there is those sort of migrant Zulu workers that works on the mines and so forth, and they would want to support MK because Zuma has reintroduced a very dangerous thing, but he's reintroduced a Zulu, narrow Zulu nationalism that plays out in MK party. And so he's going to give us a run for our money in KZN. But hopefully, I think they're not going to make a big dent nationally.
You talk about that sort of subtle Zulu influence. We saw that at the first election when the IFP decided, we out.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, the IFP, that was the politics of the IFP. I dare say the new leadership of the IFP has really tried to change that image of the IFP. It's become a much more accommodating and embracing party, away from the narrow politics of Buthelezi and so on. And I think that they've really, people see them in a different light now. And yet, here comes Zuma, brings that nationalism back in the fray. And as you rightfully point out, I mean, don't forget, not only did they refuse to be part of the ballot in 1994, they were also instrumental in black-on-black violence that really threw the country into turmoil. And now we hear similar threats from MK party, from the leadership, from Zuma. If things don't go our way, there'll be violence. If our president candidate is not on the ballot paper, there'll be violence. So I think we have to very, very carefully and very seriously keep our eye on that.
Yeah, look, I mean, for me, I'm a very positive person. I live with hope, and we've lived through all of these things, these challenges. We've come a long way. And I listen to you very carefully, and I'm thinking that, you know, maybe you can answer this. We're a 30-year democracy. The ANC has been ruling for 30 years. Globally, parties have been doing and have become fragmented. I'm going back to my next question, but the word coalition is the buzzword. And there's all kinds of coalitions. Do you ever think that the MK and the ANC could be a coalition in the future?
You know, two things. Firstly, the ANC is the only party currently that have not made any declaration of they will not be in an alliance with this one or in a coalition with that one. All other parties have said, not the EFF, not the ANC, not this one, not that one. The ANC has kept that door very open, and I think there's an element of maturity there, because at the end of the day, it's about, do we want to actually give people good governance? And if there is a demand, for example, to come to your question, that the ANC and MK needs to go into a coalition in KZN, for example, in order to have a stable government there, I think the ANC is going to be open to that. Wouldn't be their first choice, you know. Similarly with the EFF. I think there's many people in the ANC that says we don't want to have a coalition with the EFF. We've seen it being a disaster in the city of Johannesburg and elsewhere. Always these demands from the EFF for more money and so forth. So they don't want to be in an alliance with the EFF. However, if the percentage is such that the ANC drops to a certain significant below 50, they'll have to talk to the EFF, obviously.
It's about maturity.
It's about maturity. And the last point I want to make is that I'm very worried about coalitions. I must be honest. Because over the last few years, we've seen it just doesn't work. Our politicians, our parties can't get it right. And I think there's a lot of training, a lot of accommodation, and perhaps a lot of regulation that is required as to how parties go into a coalition, because as you would agree with me, you can't have what we have in Johannesburg, a party that got 0.9%, meaning about 10,000 people voted for this party, yet their candidate is the mayor of the city of Johannesburg. I mean, it's laughable.
You're talking about the city of Johannesburg. You at one point were an executive manager at the city of Johannesburg. You achieved clean audits there. Brilliant. What's going wrong? What? It's not only Joburg. I'm looking at municipalities across the country. Where are we going wrong?
It's a serious challenge. It's a very serious challenge. You know, it's one thing to have good politicians, leaders, managers at a national level, and perhaps in some cases at the provincial level. But we're just not getting it right at local government level, a municipality level. We see, I mean, we don't even have to go all the way to Johannesburg. Even just here in the city that, or the town that we are sitting currently, such dynamics and flows and ebbs and so forth. Look, I think that it boils down to competence, and it boils down to ethical leadership. That's really what it is. You know, when I was in the city under Parks Tau, there was clarity in terms of unity in purpose. We want to have service delivery for the people of Johannesburg, black and white, and we divvy up the budget and the pie to that plan. And I think, you know, I don't want to make it sound as if it's simple and easy to run a city. It's very, very difficult. You know, a city of Johannesburg, just to give you a completely different example, I mean, it has something like 9 million trees that needs to be maintained. It needs to be cut and kept up and so on and so forth. And when there is a disease that attacks the foliage and so forth, you need competent people to deal with that. There is a zoo, a zoological garden, that is so instrumental in the city because there's lots of kids from neighboring townships that will never be able to go to the Kruger and to the Pilansberg and so forth, and yet they need exposure to the Big Five and some education around it. That's just one aspect. I don't always want to talk about the water infrastructure. You know, I'll give you an example, Nishan. I sit in a mayoral committee meeting. We've had torrential rain over the last 3 weeks. Lot of water, the roads are wet, and so on. And there's a debate in council about what do we do with all this grey water. It's a problem, yeah. You know. And so they want to give it to City Parks and Zoo, saying, you need water, you've got all these parks. And we said, but it's not our mandate, you know, to hold bulk water. And then we say, Rand Water, City Water, why don't you take the water? I said, no. We can't deal with grey water because our mandate is just to provide bulk water to citizens. Why don't roads, what do you do? Roads says, no, the water, we just need to get it off the roads to make a safer environment as soon as possible. Where it goes is not our baby. That's just one example of how complex it is to run a city in an issue of water. And then, of course, 3 months later, there's a shortage of water. You know, we've got a dry spell and so on and so forth. So it's a difficult thing, but people are not getting it right at municipal level. And I think, I don't want to blame everything on coalitions, but I think because there is this flux with our voters, they're trying different things. They're saying, look, I can't put all my eggs in one basket. It seems the ANC is not doing it for me, or the DA is not doing it for me. So let me vote for a few smaller parties and hopefully it can work. Unfortunately, we've seen that because people have that right, it brings up all kinds of challenges.
We're talking to Dr. Oscar van Heerden. I'm really, really, really encouraged and happy that you're here because I haven't spoken to a Cambridge scholar yet. So this is the first for me. Finally, I want to ask, you know, what are you expecting readers to take back out of your book? And at the same time, you know, what are your aspirations going forward? I mean, I love the fact that your focus is international relations, but right here with us rather than the New Yorks and the Dubais of there. I'm very, 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 I think we can make something of that. So, yeah, finally, what is it that readers should take and your future?
Look, I want people to read this book and just get a more detailed understanding of the complexities of the ruling party. People like to, from afar, just shout and scream and say these are all the same, they are all corrupt and so on and so forth. But it's much more nuanced and it's much more complex. And there are good people in the ANC that is trying to fight off these people who want to take shortcuts to enrichments and so forth. So I hope that it gives people a better understanding of the ANC as the ruling party and not to hate it as much. You know, in the Western Cape, in particular, there is this notion that people just hate the ANC. I'm not sure why. I'm not entirely sure why. And so I hope the book will give some nuance and a bit of a different flavor to that. As to where we are standing in South Africa, you know, I would want to conclude on a very positive note. We've got huge challenges. No one is denying this. With our triple challenges of unemployment, inequality, and poverty. But Black South Africans in the main, in fact, all South Africans, not only Black South Africans, are in a much better space today than what they were 30 years ago. In terms of equality, rights, they've got rights that protects them. We've got a fantastic constitution. There's an independent judiciary, independent media. Journalists and the likes are not being haunted and imprisoned and so forth. You can write what you like. You can think what you like. You can go where you like. So these are all pluses. The economy has tripled in size since 1994. Employment has gone up. There's a lot of positives. And I don't want to say, and I re-emphasize, we have our challenges. We have our challenges. But in the world, I tell you now, Nishan, and I don't say it lightly, we are in a very, very good space in South Africa. There's turmoil in the US. There's turmoil in Europe. Most European governments are going far right. They don't want immigrants. They are Islamophobic. We see the contradiction now with Gaza. Many, many European countries supporting Israel, whilst it is a country that is performing genocide. So the world is upside down, and I tell you, I'd rather be in Paarl than anywhere else.
I echo that 100%. I'd rather be in the winelands than anywhere else in the world. I've been fortunate enough to travel, and I always say the same thing. You only know when you see what's happening on the other side.
Absolutely.
How blessed we are to be here with all its problems. Oscar, thank you so much for coming, joining us today. We wish you well from Team KC 107.7. All the best for the future, the book, and we hope that you will visit us again soon.
I appreciate it, and thanks for inviting me. And please go out and buy the book.
Your sound of the Winelands, KC 107.7.